Chapter 2 of The Death of Ivan Ilyich by Leo Tolstoy. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. The previous history of Ivan Ilyich was the simplest, the most ordinary, and the most awful. Ivan Ilyich died at the age of 45, a member of the Judicial Council. He was the son of an official whose career in Petersburg, through various ministries and departments, had been such as leads people into that position in which, though it is distinctly obvious that they are unfit to perform any kind of real duty, they yet cannot, owing to their long past service and their official rank, be dismissed, and they therefore receive a specially created fictitious post, and by no means fictitious thousands, from 6 to 10, on which they go on living till extreme old age. Such was the Privy Councillor, the superfluous member of various superfluous institutions, Ilya Efimovich Golovin. He had 3 sons. Ivan Ilyich was the 2nd son. The eldest son's career was exactly like his father's, only in a different department, and he was by now close upon that stage in the service in which the same sinecure would be reached. The 3rd son was the unsuccessful one. He had, in various positions, always made a mess of things, and was now employed in the railway department. And his father and his brothers, and still more their wives, did not merely dislike meeting him, but avoided, except in extreme necessity, recollecting his existence. His sister had married Baron Greff, a Petersburg official of the same stamp as his father-in-law. Ivan Ilyich was le phoenix de la famille, as people said. He was not so frigid and precise as the eldest son, nor so wild as the youngest. He was the happy mean between them, a shrewd, lively, pleasant, and well-bred man. He had been educated with his younger brother at the School of Jurisprudence. The younger brother had not finished the school course, but was expelled when in the 5th class. Ivan Ilyich completed the course successfully. At school he was just the same as he was later on all his life, an intelligent fellow, highly good-humored and sociable, but strict in doing what he considered to be his duty. His duty he considered whatever was so considered by those persons who were set in authority over him. He was not a toady as a boy, nor later on as a grown-up person, but from his earliest years he was attracted, as a fly to the light, to persons of good standing in the world, assimilated their manners and their views of life, and established friendly relations with them. All the enthusiasms of childhood and youth passed, leaving no great traces in him. He gave way to sensuality and to vanity, and latterly, when in the higher classes at school, to liberalism, but always keeping within certain limits which were unfailingly marked out for him by his instincts. At school he had committed actions which had struck him beforehand as great vileness, and gave him a feeling of loathing for himself at the very time he was committing them. But later on, perceiving that such actions were committed also by men of good position, and were not regarded by them as base, he was able, not to regard them as good, but to forget about them completely, and was never mortified by recollections of them. Leaving the School of Jurisprudence in the 10th class, and receiving from his father a sum of money for his outfit, Ivan Ilyich ordered his clothes at Sharmer's, hung on his watch-chain a medallion inscribed Respice Finem, said good-bye to the prince who was the principal of his school, had a farewell dinner with his comrades at Donnan's, and with all his new fashionable belongings, travelling trunk, linen, suits of clothes, shaving and toilet appurtenances, and travelling rug, all ordered and purchased at the very best shops, set off to take the post of secretary on special commissions for the governor of a province, a post which had been obtained for him by his father. In the province, Ivan Ilyich, without loss of time, made himself a position as easy and agreeable as his position had been in the School of Jurisprudence. He did his work, made his career, and at the same time led a life of well-bred social gaiety. Occasionally he visited various districts on official duty, behaved with dignity both with his superiors and his inferiors, and with exactitude and an incorruptible honesty of which he could not help feeling proud, performed the duties with which he was entrusted, principally having to do with the dissenters. When engaged in official work, he was, in spite of his youth and taste for frivolous amusements, exceedingly reserved, official, and even severe. but in social life he was often amusing and witty, and always good-natured, well-bred, and bon enfant, as was said of him by his chief and his chief's wife, with whom he was like one of the family. In the province there was, too, a connection with one of the ladies who obtruded their charms on the stylish young lawyer. There was a dressmaker, too, and there were drinking bouts with smart officers visiting the neighborhood, and visits to a certain outlying street after supper. There was a rather cringing obsequiousness in his behavior, too, with his chief, and even his chief's wife. But all this was accompanied with such a tone of the highest breeding that it could not be called by harsh names. It all came under the rubric of the French saying, "Il faut que la jeunesse se passe." Everything was done with clean hands, in clean shirts, with French phrases, and, what was of most importance, in the highest society, and consequently with the approval of people of rank. Such was Ivan Ilyitch's career for 5 years, and then came a change in his official life. New methods of judicial procedure were established, new men were wanted to carry them out, and Ivan Ilyitch became such a new man. Ivan Ilyitch was offered the post of examining magistrate, and he accepted it, in spite of the fact that this post was in another province, and he would have to break off all the ties he had formed and form new ones. Ivan Ilyitch's friends met together to see him off, had their photographs taken in a group, presented him with a silver cigarette case, and he set off to his new post. As an examining magistrate, Ivan Ilyitch was as comme il faut, as well-bred, as adroit in keeping official duties apart from private life, and as successful in gaining universal respect, as he had been as secretary of private commissions. The duties of his new office were in themselves of far greater interest and attractiveness for Ivan Ilyitch. In his former post it had been pleasant to pass, in his smart uniform from Charmer's, through the crowd of petitioners and officials waiting timorously and envying him, and to march with his easy swagger straight into the governor's private room, there to sit down with him to tea and cigarettes. But the persons directly subject to his authority were few. The only such persons were the district police superintendents and the dissenters, when he was serving on special commissions. And he liked treating such persons affably, almost like comrades, liked to make them feel that he, able to annihilate them, was behaving in this simple, friendly way with them. But such people were then few in number. Now, as an examining magistrate, Ivan Ilyitch felt that every one without exception, the most dignified, the most self-satisfied people, all were in his hands, and that he had but to write certain words on a sheet of paper with a printed heading, and this dignified, self-satisfied person would be brought before him in the capacity of a defendant or a witness, and if he did not care to make him sit down, he would have to stand up before him and answer his questions. Ivan Ilyitch never abused this authority of his. On the contrary, he tried to soften the expression of it. But the consciousness of this power, and the possibility of softening its effect, constituted for him the chief interest and attractiveness of his new position. In the work itself, in the preliminary inquiries, that is, Ivan Ilyitch very rapidly acquired the art of setting aside every consideration irrelevant to the official aspect of the case, and of reducing every case, however complex, to that form in which it could, in a purely external fashion, be put on paper, completely excluding his personal view of the matter, and what was of paramount importance, observing all the necessary formalities. All this work was new, and he was one of the first men who put into practical working the reforms in judicial procedure enacted in 1864. On settling in a new town in his position as examining magistrate, Ivan Ilyitch made new acquaintances, formed new ties, took up a new line, and adopted a rather different attitude. He took up an attitude of somewhat dignified aloofness towards the provincial authorities, while he picked out the best circle among the legal gentlemen and wealthy gentry living in the town, and adopted a tone of slight dissatisfaction with the government, moderate liberalism, and lofty civic virtue. With this, while making no change in the elegance of his get-up, Ivan Ilyitch, in his new office, gave up shaving, and left his beard free to grow as it liked. Ivan Ilyitch's existence in the new town proved to be very agreeable. The society which took the line of opposition to the governor was friendly and good. His income was larger, and he found a source of increased enjoyment in whist, at which he began to play at this time, and having a faculty for playing cards good-humouredly and being rapid and exact in his calculations, he was, as a rule, on the winning side. After living 2 years in the new town, Ivan Ilyitch met his future wife. Praskovya Fyodorovna Mihail was the most attractive, clever, and brilliant girl in the set in which Ivan Ilyitch moved. Among other amusements and recreations, after his labors as a magistrate, Ivan Ilyitch started a light, playful flirtation with Praskovya Fyodorovna. Ivan Ilyitch, when he was an assistant secretary, had danced as a rule. As an examining magistrate, he danced only as an exception. He danced now, as it were, under protest, as though to show that, though I am serving on the new reformed legal code, and am of the fifth class in official rank, still, if it comes to a question of dancing, in that line, too, I can do better than others. In this spirit he danced, now and then, toward the end of the evening, with Praskovya Fyodorovna, and it was principally during these dances that he won the heart of Praskovya Fyodorovna. She fell in love with him. Ivan Ilyitch had no clearly defined intention of marrying, but when the girl fell in love with him, he put the question to himself. After all, why not get married? He said to himself. The young lady, Praskovya Fyodorovna, was of good family, nice-looking. There was a little bit of property. Ivan Ilyitch might have reckoned on a more brilliant match, but this was a good match. Ivan Ilyitch had his salary. She, he hoped, would have as much of her own. It was a good family. She was a sweet, pretty, and perfectly comme il faut young woman. To say that Ivan Ilyitch got married because he fell in love with his wife and found her in sympathy with his views of life would be as untrue as to say that he got married because the people of his world approved of the match. Ivan Ilyitch was influenced by both considerations. He was doing what was agreeable to himself in securing such a wife, and at the same time doing what persons of higher standing looked upon as the correct thing. And Ivan Ilyitch got married. The process itself of getting married, and the early period of married life, with the conjugal caresses, the new furniture, the new crockery, the new house linen, all up to the time of his wife's pregnancy, went off very well, so that Ivan Ilyitch had already begun to think that, so far from marriage breaking up that kind of frivolous, agreeable, light-hearted life, always decorous and always approved by society, which he regarded as the normal life, it would even increase its agreeableness. But at that point, in the early months of his wife's pregnancy, there came in a new element, unexpected, unpleasant, tiresome, and unseemly, which could never have been anticipated, and from which there was no escape. His wife, without any kind of reason, it seemed to Ivan Ilyitch, de gaieté de cœur, as he expressed it, began to disturb the agreeableness and decorum of their life. She began, without any sort of justification, to be jealous, exacting in her demands on his attention, squabbled over everything, and treated him to the coarsest and most unpleasant scenes. At first Ivan Ilyitch hoped to escape from the unpleasantness of this position by taking up the same frivolous and well-bred line that had served him well on other occasions of difficulty. He endeavored to ignore his wife's ill-humor, went on living light-heartedly and agreeably as before, invited friends to play cards, tried to get away himself to the club or to his friends. But his wife began on one occasion with such energy, abusing him in such coarse language, and so obstinately persisted in her abuse of him every time he failed in carrying out her demands, obviously having made up her mind firmly to persist till he gave way, that is, stayed at home and was as dull as she was, that Ivan Ilyitch took alarm. He perceived that matrimony, at least with his wife, was not invariably conducive to the pleasures and proprieties of life, but, on the contrary, often destructive of them, and that it was therefore essential to erect some barrier to protect himself from these disturbances. And Ivan Ilyitch began to look about for such means of protecting himself. His official duties were the only thing that impressed Praskovya Fyodorovna, and Ivan Ilyitch began to use his official position, and the duties arising from it, in his struggle with his wife to fence off his own independent world apart. With the birth of the baby, the attempts at nursing it, and the various unsuccessful experiments with foods, with the illnesses, real and imaginary, of the infant and its mother, in which Ivan Ilyitch was expected to sympathize, though he never had the slightest idea about them. The need for him to fence off a world apart for himself, outside his family life, became still more imperative. As his wife grew more irritable and exacting, so did Ivan Ilyitch more and more transfer the center of gravity of his life to his official work. He became fonder and fonder of official life, and more ambitious than he had been. Very quickly, not more than a year after his wedding, Ivan Ilyitch had become aware that conjugal life, though providing certain comforts, was, in reality, a very intricate and difficult business towards which one must, if one is to do one's duty, that is, lead the decorous life approved by society, work out for oneself a definite line, just as in the government service. And such a line Ivan Ilyitch did work out for himself in his married life. He expected from his home life only those comforts, of dinner at home, of housekeeper, and bed, which it could give him, and above all that perfect propriety in external observances required by public opinion. For the rest, he looked for a good-humoured pleasantness, and if he found it, he was very thankful. If he met with antagonism and querulousness, he promptly retreated into the separate world he had shut off for himself in his official life, and there he found solace. Ivan Ilyitch was prized as a good official, and 3 years later he was made assistant public prosecutor. The new duties of this position, their dignity, the possibility of bringing anyone to trial and putting anyone in prison, the publicity of the speeches and the success Ivan Ilyitch had in that part of his work, all this made his official work still more attractive to him. Children were born to him. His wife became steadily more querulous and ill-tempered, but the line Ivan Ilyitch had taken up for himself in home life put him almost out of reach of her grumbling. After 7 years of service in the same town, Ivan Ilyitch was transferred to another province with the post of public prosecutor. They moved, money was short, and his wife did not like the place they had moved to. The salary was, indeed, a little higher than before, but their expenses were larger. Besides, a couple of children died, and home life consequently became even less agreeable for Ivan Ilyitch. For every mischance that occurred in their new place of residence, Praskovya Fyodorovna blamed her husband. The greater number of subjects of conversation between husband and wife, especially the education of the children, led to questions which were associated with previous quarrels, and quarrels were ready to break out at every instant. There remained only those rare periods of being in love, which did indeed come upon them, but never lasted long. These were the islands at which they put in for a time, but they soon set off again upon the ocean of concealed hostility that was made manifest in their aloofness from one another. This aloofness might have distressed Ivan Ilyitch if he had believed that this ought not to be so, but by now he regarded this position as perfectly normal, and it was, indeed, the goal toward which he worked in his home life. His aim was to make himself more and more free from the unpleasant aspects of domestic life, and to render them harmless and decorous. And he attained this aim by spending less and less time with his family. And when he was forced to be at home, he endeavored to secure his tranquility by the presence of outsiders. The great thing for Ivan Ilyitch was having his office. In the official world, all the interest of life was concentrated for him. And this interest absorbed him. The sense of his own power, the consciousness of being able to ruin anyone he wanted to ruin, even the external dignity of his office, when he made his entry into the court or met subordinate officials, his success in the eyes of his superiors and his subordinates, and above all, his masterly handling of cases, of which he was conscious. All this delighted him, and, together with chat with his colleagues, dining out, and whist, filled his life. So that, on the whole, Ivan Ilyitch's life still went on in the way he thought it should go, agreeably and decorously. So he lived for another 7 years. His eldest daughter was already 16, another child had died, and there was left only one other, a boy at the high school, a subject of dissension. Ivan Ilyitch wanted to send him to the School of Jurisprudence, while Praskovya Fyodorovna, to spite him, sent him to the high school. The daughter had been educated at home, and had turned out well. The boy, too, did fairly well at his lessons. End of chapter 2. Read by Laurie Ann Walden.